All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, it's a Monday. And what a game last night. The Steelers, the Lions, the touchdown celebrations, everybody focused on football for an entire Sunday night. Wasn't that a hoot?
Man.
You say there was baseball?
What?
Oh.
What?
I thought everybody was focused on the great celebrations the Steelers did in defeating the Lions last night, but evidently there was baseball too. So you say. Hey, the usual suspects are here. I know you've been talking baseball all day long, and we are prepared to do the same. What a ending, what a finish, what a game, what a series, what a team. And we can go on from there. Nick, Barry, and myself are here till 4 o'clock. It is the band back together once again. It is the usual suspects all in one building. And we are here for you until 4 p.m. So we look forward to getting down to brass tacks and all that was and is in the World Series, as well as a somewhat, I would say, more than mildly disappointing loss by the Texans to the Seahawks. But boy, you sure know you got a quarterback, and you sure know he can play.
Yo, man, I tell you what,
I'm impressed with that kid.
As a city, Houston went 1-1 yesterday, but that might have been one of the funnest days of sports I can remember for this city in a really long time. When you look at what that team. The Texans lost, but you have to be proud of the way they played the Seahawks.
No question.
And Deshaun Watson. And I said on Twitter that I've been coming up with reasons to continue to not doubt Deshaun Watson, but not put him on the pedestal of, oh, this is definitely the guy. They have a franchise. It's getting really, really hard. I mean, did he make some rookie mistakes? Of course. Yep. He's a rookie. He's going to. I'm almost just done with trying to be rational about it, and I'm just ready to hop on the giddy bandwagon of having a franchise quarterback. That said, look at guys like Derek Carr that are struggling. It can happen, so be patient.
Sophomore jinxes are possible, yeah, too, but I'm with you because I said, look, Kansas City, man, was one of those barometers, and then this Seattle defense was a barometer, and I told Lisa during the game, I there's no way I can't be anything but a huge believer in this kid. Now, some of the escapability factor that he got to against that Seattle defense, getting out of potential sacks,
the
creating
deep ball
offensive
accuracy.
Oh my god! And the strength of the arm,
yeah,
the throwing on the run. Everybody knows he's got wheels. Man, I'm telling you,
crazy
what,
good.
Happy for this city in that regard. But really, I mean, to feel the pain that I felt to know that three plays is all it took to go straight down the field and beat that defense, it was like, that just shouldn't happen.
Yeah, you know, everyone was hitting. I think somebody even on Sunday brought up trading Dwayne Brown to the Seahawks for Jimmy Graham. And I'm like, no. At this point, after that game, if you're going to trade Dwayne Brown for anything, go get some help at safety. Or a draft pick,
I'll tell you
something,
what.
But that defense needs some help in the secondary.
Single high safety with his only responsibility being the middle of the field deep, and Jimmy Graham goes butt naked into the end zone and goes, "Hi, I'm here."
Yeah, and they mentioned it on SportsCenter too. Well, why not call a timeout and get your bleep together there? Like everybody's just kind of milling about, not sure what to do.
And we're talking about all that. Let's talk about the first two plays that got them in the position to throw to Graham too. Like anybody else there to help Gilchrist? Anybody help to do anything?
Yeah. That the Texans secondary is Ken Giles. I think that's a fair comparison between the two at this point. But what a day, dude. Man. What a day in Houston. What a weekend.
No doubt.
I mean, I nailed all my predictions.
I was going to ask you to run the numbers on Ken Giles for me again.
Nailed all my predictions.
Dodgers in six.
Dodgers in six. Darvish was lights out. I said they would. I got nothing right this weekend. Like nothing right. I picked the Seahawks to win, but even then, that was in jeopardy.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about this, man. I don't love the guys on Twitter that can't wait to tell pounce. You that you're wrong,
yeah.
But I never hear from them when I'm right. Like, yeah. I never got one tweet about the Rockies getting a wild card. I never got one. It's amazing. But yet, I'm going to get plenty of Dodgers and six tweets, and that's okay. You know, that's what people do. But
I almost had to coach you like you coach me on Twitter on like one of those on like Saturday.
And when I was getting into it with somebody about Gurriel, yes. And should he be suspended? Yeah. And yeah, I got called the P word and all kinds of fun stuff. But I don't care. I have never been more happy to be wrong about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honest to God, it's. Yeah, I try to be objective. So because if I would have picked the Astros in six, then I would have been a homer to a bunch of people. Because, you know, being native and born right. And raised and all, and growing up an Astros fan. Oh, well, you're just picking the Astros because you're a fan. So I try to be objective. But, dude, when I'm wrong and it means the Astros are winning, oh, I'll take it. I'll take
no
that L
doubt about
every
it.
Time. So good times indeed.
Shout out and thanks to Travis Johnson for serving up the home run balls that he did in the late innings closing games for the Dodgers. I'm glad to see he found another
you
job.
Think he looks like Kenley Jansen.
I tweeted it out and people started getting all over it going, oh my God, he does. He is.
That's
and even
hilarious.
He started laughing and saying he was going along with it. But yeah, I thought that was funny.
That is too funny. By the way, I just wanted to say I was in Beaumont on Friday
yeah, sure.
doing a show, which mm-hmm. was really weird. And
weird.
Yeah, I'll just spare all the details of it, but
okay.
There were, we're apparently pretty big in Beaumont, ESPN 97.5 is.
Well, I thought you were going to say our show is.
I think it is too, because people were coming up to me, you have fans out there. Like, people came up to me, were like, hey man, love the show, big fans of you guys, love Joel, big fan of Joel's.
Awesome.
I was like, okay.
Cool.
Yes, I met these dudes are brothers, they're big fans of yours, so.
Well, we all know Nick is popular there. Nick is, I mean, I've never seen anybody in my life pull a 180 better than Nick. Nick went from the anti-409 comment, which just got all the hate in the world, and the minute he filled in for you for one time.
They loved him.
He had every mom cougar on the planet wanting hugs. He had every chick at the bar going, ooh, that's Nick. I mean, he
it wasn't
turned
like
it,
that, but it was not what
it,
I expected.
You taking all the 50-year-old Beaumont moms to pound
no,
town?
No, those
or
are the
what?
Ones bringing yeah. you toiletries. Nick was taken in the 30 to 40 range
okay.
and turning some heads.
Well, somebody did bring up the fact that they were like, hey man, you know, love the show. Although you're talking to me, you pick on the 409 a lot. And I was like, no, that's Nick. Nick picks on the 409. I love the 409. Not true, but still, I do. Yeah, I had to remind them that you are the 409.
It's always
hater.
Good to be confused when you know you get the benefit of it. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, if I'm getting the hate, yeah. But yeah, I thought
that's
I'd pass
awesome.
Along that you got some friends
cool.
out there, some fans, and. It was a good time. It was weird, though, because the show that I was doing in Beaumont, as part of the show, they would give you free food. And then, so that was part of the ticket.
Well, you told me on Friday during the remote, hey, this is a pretty good deal, though.
Yeah, I mean, $30 and you get free food. But then when we get there, the guy gets on stage and he's like, yeah, you know, yeah, thanks for coming. We're going to raise money for Harvey. Oh, by the way, I know that the flyer said for $30 it includes food, but... That was kind of an error in that. And everybody's there. I was like, oh no. He's like, yeah, that was kind of a mistake. Like you're not going to get free dinner. But we're going to give you an appetizer. So here's your first comic.
Wow.
Here's
did
some
people
chips
get, like,
with
mad
some hot
snooties.
Oh, bro. And no, dude, that's exactly what it was.
Is that right?
They bring out a plate of crackers and cheese
oh.
and give it to people. I was like, damn.
That had to make it rough on y'all because then the people
man.
Are already just ticked off.
So when I went up, I was like, I was third. There was four of us, and I was third. And it was all friends of mine on the show. Zaya Devji was one of the comics, and then Adam Bob, and then me, and then Crystal Powell. So when I come up, I was like, guys, give it up for Adam Bob. Because this is typical. You have to do this, right? It's like standard. So I'm like, guys, give it up for Adam, and they're clapping. I was like, get him up for Zaya Devji. I was like, I would tell you to give it up for Jeff, the guy that runs it, but he told y'all aren't getting free food, so I'm sure you hate him. So let's just keep it moving.
That's awesome.
It was cool. But he handled it like a pro, though. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes that kind of stuff happens. But he was Ooh. Man enough to stand up there and tell people they ain't getting free food. So I was like, well, good for you, player. Shoot, wow. I don't want that to be me.
Yeah. I could see him getting defensive about it. I'm like, look, come on, it was $30.
But he's
you
a
didn't
big
really
dude.
Think you're going to get free food.
He's a big, like, he was a big muscular dude, and he looks like what's that dude The news shows SWAT coming out. Shamar.
Yeah. I know you're talking about.
He looks
Shamar,
like that dude.
I forget what his last name is.
Yeah, yeah, but he's like big and all handsome. And I was like, ooh, wait, no. But he's like, he was up there. He's like, yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you're upset about it, you can try to catch me.
Wow.
Like, but he handled it about as well as you can when you take free food away.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, good times in Beaumont.
Well, let's let the fun and games begin. We're going to open up the phone line, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. You can call. You can text that line, and we will get to you and respond to you throughout the show. And also, you can reach us on Twitter, at the producer Nick, at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. We're here for you. This is going to be fun. It is The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
The batter will be the young infielder, Alex Bregman. Bregman's had a nice series, had a couple homers.
And homering off of Jansen yesterday on a slider. First pitch.
That's in the air to left. Here comes Fisher. Throw by Aether.
The throw to the plate. Not in time. Astros win. Astros win.
Astros win. In time. Alex Bregman.
Just pure joy. Because when you look around you and you see the smiles on your teammates' face, it makes everything worth it. It makes every weight that you lifted in the off season, every swing that you took in the cage. When you feel like you came through for your team and you see the joy on their faces, there's nothing like it. It's such a special feeling.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, that was audio of Chris Sale. No, it wasn't. It was audio of Alex Bregman in postgame after you heard the ESPN call of the game winner in the game, dare I say, of a lifetime for most of us, and one of the greatest games, if not the greatest game in World Series history. You take game two, you take game five, and regardless of how this thing comes out in the end, this will be one for the memory books as well as the record books. This was one already been one hell of a series.
Let's get it out of the way right now. Where do you two stand? Was this the greatest, not only the greatest World Series game you've ever watched, was it the greatest baseball game you've ever watched? Yes or no?
For me, it's got to be. I mean, I don't watch that much baseball to begin with. So, yeah, for me, it's definitely the best baseball game that I've ever seen, okay. Period.
I don't think there's any question. I know where I was, and I know watching Gibson's home run against the A's and all the dramatics, but that was one play.
What about Game 6, 2011, Cardinals-Rangers?
I remember Cardinals-Rangers. I remember the American League Championship series with Aaron Boone. And even I go back to listening in school and the Bucky Dent home run. Those were championship series.
Because I think Game 6, 2011 goes down as one of the greatest games ever in World Series history.
The Marlins-Indians with the hit that squeaked through to win, walk-off.
Yeah.
Game 7, that was.
But Game 6 was the multiple comebacks. And then I think that's what does this for me is... It's the multiple down three, home run, tie it up. Down three, home run, tie it up. Just the relentlessness of
the
coming back.
The improbability.
And then the Dodgers coming back.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. The improbability of both teams. Every time you thought, well, three, there's no way.
Yeah.
Well, in the ninth, there's no way. Well, in the tenth, there's no way. I mean, every time you said no way, there was a way.
Yep.
And that's why I'm not trying to be, obviously, people know I'm biased towards the Astros now. But even if I was watching this in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I'd tell you, as a baseball fan, that's the greatest game I've ever watched.
It is, without a doubt, the greatest World Series game I've seen and the greatest baseball game I've ever watched. Because I think you have to take into account a little bit the fact that you have a rooting interest in it. It's mm-hmm. If they would have lost that game, it would have been disappointing and crushing. But I still would have said it was the greatest baseball game I've ever watched. And
I
would have because I tell you what, game two was one of the best I'd ever seen.
You take the combination of those two, and again, we're biased,
yeah.
But you take the combination of the two, it's hard not to put this series, regardless of how it ends up going, in the final
say-so. I'm with you there.
It's hard not to put this series one of the best World Series ever because, I mean, again, from you take game two, game five, and you don't even know what's going to happen going forward, plus all of the all-star caliber and potential Hall of Famers in this series.
Yep.
When you go back and you look at Kershaw and Verlander and Altuve and Correa and Springer and Bregman, and then you look at the other side and Seager and Bellinger and all the guys that they have too, and you go,
Man.
It has everything.
When they went up four, when the Dodgers went up four, I thought, well, that's got to be it.
I mean, it's
Kershaw. That's it. And that's what makes it even more, because you expect, you always hear about it's Kershaw. And he's had his problems in the postseason, mm-hmm. but he didn't in game one. And you saw the record of 101-1 with a 4-1, 4-run lead. He had lost one time in 102 games with a 4-run lead. And then you're just like, that. There's no way. There's no way. This offense has been struggling. They managed two hits in the previous game and lost. They were both solo home runs. They lost that game because their bullpen is garbage. You know, Keuchel has already given up four runs, and it just...
And he was dealing early, too. He started to run out of steam. But look, those first couple innings, he looked like... Not that he was going to be like he was in game one, but he looked like he was in control.
In the second inning, I would definitely agree from the second inning on. But yes. I thought in the first inning, not only did he struggle, he looked like he had lost his confidence because he couldn't locate. He couldn't find the zone.
Slider.
He wasn't getting any calls. And I was just walking off the field after that first inning, giving up the three runs. His body language was garbage. And I was just like, oh, that's not good. He already has no confidence. He's frustrated. He was talking to himself. He was yelling at the ump. That's half an inning, dude. Like, I was like, this is going
to
be ugly.
But I'm with you. I thought that they had to be lights out. And when Keuchel gave up the big first inning, I thought, it's over. It's over. Yeah. You can't give Clayton Kershaw, as it is, you're hoping to stay in the game. But if you give him a three spot, I just don't know that you come back from that. But thank God I didn't turn it off. And thank
my
God.
Wife went to bed. 4-0, she went to bed. And I was like, you're not going to watch? I mean, just to... No, I'm going to bed. I'm pissed. I was like, okay. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean...
You wake up to... Because you know there's some people that went to bed early at some point, right?
Yeah.
You know there's guys that went to bed in the seventh inning or whatever. Man.
I remember, the exact words out of my mouth... When Gurriel hit the home run, oh my God, I thought it was over. And here we are tied up. But then they give up a three-run bomb, and they're down three again. And then I love it. One, they get Kershaw out of the game. And two, the dude, where's my car face that he made when Altuve went yard was like, oh, this one may stack up to be a good one.
You have the fourth and the fifth inning. They go back-to-back innings with three-run home runs to tie the game, especially after Bellinger's three-run home run in the fifth. It just... At that point, you were like, this is already one of the greatest games I've watched. And they weren't even done. There was so much more to be done in that game.
Yep.
And tell the truth, though, when you saw who was left in the bullpen.
Oh, my God.
And it was Giles and Liriano. That was who was left towards the end of the game. Remember that?
And I saw Liriano warming up twice. Now, when McHugh came into the game.
Of course, they had Fields left, so and someone else. So I was like, okay.
Lisa was hanging in there for a while, right? And I'm explaining things to her along the way, and she's like, why aren't you excited for McHugh? And I said, because he won't be sharp. My biggest thing is, I know he's been decent, and he's been steady. But when you haven't pitched in so long, I just was so worried about his control. And then lo and behold, here came, he kept trying to paint the outside corner. I was like, whoop, whoop. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. I mean, Gregerson comes in. I even said as much. I was like, man, McHugh, don't make. Because I've been hollering for McHugh and Gregerson out of that pen. Gregerson gives you a third of an inning, gets the out. I was like, okay, why not see him again?
Surprised.
But that's fine.
I was surprised Gregerson didn't get more runs.
Yeah. And then McHugh comes in. And I'm like, all right, here we go. And then he starts getting hit around. I was like, oh, damn it. That's already bad enough. I missed on Darvish. I have completely flipped what I thought would happen at this in this homestand, because I thought they would lose two and win one. They won. It was just the opposite, including the games and the outcomes. And here comes McHugh, but he settled down a little bit and he did his job. You know, he kept them in it at least. I wouldn't say, you know, I think he's the one that gave up the Bellinger home run, didn't he?
McHugh gave up the Bellinger home run. Yeah.
So, but he kept them in there. Peacock did. It's
I'm going to tell you right now, and we can get into this if you want.
But
you mentioned, because I saw Liriano warming up twice, and I was like, oh, Lord, Barry and I are both going to be on the same page on this one. Don't go there. The only thing worse would be if Tony Sipp was available. But then to see everything the way it was shaken out, and at least A.J. Hinch, more than anything else, and we can talk about what he's done and how great some of the buttons he's pushed have turned out. But at least he stuck to what he told the reporters before the game, and he was not going to Ken Giles. And God bless Dave Roberts for going against everything that he said he wasn't going to do, and he put Morrow in the game. And Morrow, again, another pitcher for the Dodgers, almost gave up the cycle in a half an inning. And it was absolutely fantastic, but I said this to you guys in the production meeting, and I will say it again. Ken Giles next year is either on another team, or he will be tail between legs trying to figure out a role as a setup man, because my analogy to this is Keith Bostic, and if you don't know the name, it's totally acceptable and understandable. Keith Bostic was the lineman in the onside kick in the Seahawks-Packer game that all he had to do was get out of the way and let Jordy Nelson catch the ball, and they win the game. Instead, he tried to be a hero. He fumbled it. The Seahawks recovered it. They went and they won the NFC Championship. They went to the Super Bowl. And after the game, I was told by so many members of the team that around the organization that said he will never play another game because in that locker room, you only get so many chances to go to the big game. And every one of his teammates will never forget this. And whether it's that or the fact that he's just lost the trust of everyone from his manager on down, you got to have balls of steel and a mental focus when you're a closer. And I think that there one or two of those things are lacking. And I think that what AJ Hinch said there to me sent a message that said, as much as we were talking about this on Friday, hey, he's your closer. I don't know that you see him the rest of the series, but I think next year is going to be awfully
different.
Yeah,
once he faltered, though, I was fine. I mean, you can't run him back out there. Mm-hmm. And I felt that way after, was it game four? Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you just can't. I mean, at that point, you've got to run him out there when you did it and hope that he, saves the game for you. But he didn't. And once he lost that game, then I was with you. I'm like, yep, that's it. You can't do that anymore.
That's a mental block.
Now, where
right
do
now,
you go?
And which a psychological is, thing as much as it's a physical thing.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, now somebody like a Gregerson or Davinsky or Harris or one of these guys is going to have to be your de facto closer. Because Giles doesn't have it, and he's not going to the rest of the playoffs.
And the bullpen is all, besides the big balls and the mental frame of mind to put the blinders on and focus, it's just about trust, and you can tell who AJ trusts right now because he trusts Brad Peacock, because
he trusts
Will Harris and Davinsky. Those three guys,
so
he's got some trust.
I would probably look to see Davinsky as your closer.
I hope the whole flight to L.A. he had ice on his arm because he is going to be called.
He's
going to
be the closer.
Yeah,
I mean it looks that way now.
Well, so we're going to talk some more baseball. I know it's not shocking, but as we like to do, we also bring in the experts that you like to hear from as well so we can have some spirited dialogue that you can't get anywhere else. Jeff Blummer, our man who's been with us all year, is going to join us next. He's going to talk some baseball with us. He was there in L.A. for the first two games. We'll talk about that, as well as all the great breakdown from the weekend. Jeff Blum joins us next from the AT&T Sports Network and the Astros television broadcast. Don't go anywhere. Back with a whole lot more. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. But I ain't going out like no punk
bitch. Get used to one style, yo, when I might. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on the Usual Suspects, where it doesn't get much better than that. A lot of fun in games, and normally in this segment, we have Charlie Palillo join us from 1:30 to 2. He's lucky enough to be in L.A. He left early this morning, so we're gonna give him a pass. And in his place, we're going to step up a notch. We're going to bring in the man that, as much as we love to hear Dan Shulman and the ESPN crew calling the games and giving us the sound bites under the four-letter network in which we participate, we miss us some Blummer and the fact that he has been great to us throughout this year in the playoffs. Joining us just adds to how much we appreciate his wisdom and comedy. Jeff Blum, the color commentator for your Houston Astros on AT&T Sportsnet, and also an avid fan attending games in L.A., and we'll get to that. Joining us on the hotline, HR&P listener line. Blummer, thanks so much for spending some time with us, my man.
Hey, great to be on with you guys. Good to be still involved.
Well, we'd like to keep you involved, but how much caffeine was consumed this morning? Because I know we were all tweeting, and we were all dialed into that. It was amazing to me, and we were talking about it in the first segment. You give us a better perspective because you played. Now you cover the team and cover the sport. But is that the greatest baseball game and or World Series game you've ever witnessed?
Yeah, and without a doubt. There are so many things going on that I honestly can't comprehend or even wrap my mind around, even as a player or an analyst or a fan, just because – the resiliency of both teams to begin with, but the ability of the Astros to never get down. They're sitting there watching their bullpen implode. They're watching the other team get big hits after they get big hits, yet they continue to come back and get big hits. That, I mean, that explains a lot about not just the talent these guys have to go out there and do it, but there's something internally that is clicking in these guys that we can't put our finger on, that we haven't seen before. And I mean, I know Clutch City was what was given to the Houston Rockets back in the 90s, but I tell you what, Clutch City has come alive again with these guys, man.
Yeah, indeed. Hey, Jeff, I'm curious, from a player's perspective, you're going through a game like this. Is it? And you heard Alex Bregman in a post game talk about the fact that they met behind the mound and talked about, let's just have fun. Is it easier said than done? Because I know me, I'm an emotional dude. If I'm on that team and I'm down three, I'm probably in the dugout like, oh man, this is not good. Yeah, I mean, how is it? Are these guys just giving us a story by telling us that they were up and in it the whole time? How difficult is that?
No, I don't think they're giving you a story. I think these guys have actually been extremely transparent, and you know, with the World Series and the microscope on them and all the attention that we are giving them now, I think we're getting an idea of the heightened awareness that these guys play the game with and the heightened awareness they have of each other on their team. I'm not going to take credit for noticing this, but I said early on in the season when we were doing a couple of our broadcasts that there's a real opportunity with these guys, because I think they sat down in the clubhouse in spring training, looked at one another and said, yeah, this is a group I can play with. This is a group that can go all the way and make things happen. And I think we're seeing it come to fruition now. But I don't know, you know, you've got 45,000 fans sitting on top of you. You've got guys getting loose on the mound that you're not sure are going to come through. Yet these guys gather and have a meeting and say, hey, let's just have a little bit of fun and enjoy the moment. That's something special in a magnificent moment like the World Series. So these guys are remarkable.
Well, let's talk about two guys in particular, Blummer, and guys that you know very well, but just so you can talk about maybe just their mental makeup. We all know that George Springer and Alex Bregman have all the tools. But you look at the defensive plays and there's no other way to put it.
You look at them.
Yeah, and exactly. And having the balls that Bregman has to make the plays that he makes when it's a small window of opportunity, right? And then you look at a guy like Springer who messes up in the field and you always say, oh, he's coming up the next half inning. Boy, I bet you he'd sure like to make up for it. And then he hits like a 450 bomb and you're like, they got a little extra something. They got that it factor. And it's fun to watch because those two guys, especially in the postseason and especially coming over and kind of getting past some of the adversity, especially with Springer, like we were talking about pressing, this has been just fantastic storylines.
It has. And, you know, there's life experiences that go into these things that create who you are as a person. And then you got professional athletes that go out there and have tremendous talent and tremendous opportunity, and they take advantage of it. George Springer, for me, is a guy who's been dealing with adversity his whole life, the stuttering problem, the ability to put himself out there and expose himself, you know, with the vulnerability and doing interviews, gives you an idea of his person, and he's not afraid of anything. I think that's the biggest thing with some of these guys is there's no fear. They don't see the negative in it. They see the opportunity in it. And George Springer, you know, he had an opportunity in front of himself, failed by diving on that ball and leading to a run that gave the Dodgers a lead. But he also recognized that there was an opportunity his next AB to do some damage. And, I mean, he absolutely destroyed that baseball. He took out every ounce of anger he had on that play before on that baseball and crushed it. And then on the other side, you've got Alex Bregman, a 23-year-old, you know, just I almost want to say an arrogant punk, but this guy is such a special athlete, and I love watching him play because he has had opportunities to make big plays, and he succeeded. And I think the reason he has succeeded is because he has a mentality, and we've heard it in some of the interviews, where he has thought about what he is going to do with the baseball before he gets it. And I think that's a credit to him as a baseball player. I think that's a credit to him as a talent. To have the mentality and the ability to put those two things together. And these guys, if you're a kid watching these Astros play and you're playing minor league, like little league baseball, and you're growing up, you want to model yourself after these guys because they are doing things extremely well right now.
You talk about what Bregman has been doing, Altuve, Correa, Springer. Who, if you had to pick right now, who's your MVP of this World Series for this team?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Can you just pick one? I mean, they had five guys hit a home run last night. You know, trying to narrow it down to one guy would be incredible. I can't. I literally can't. I wish I could, but I can't. Because, I mean, Yuli's come up with big hits. I know the controversy surrounds him, but he's come up with big hits. Brian McCann for me. I mean, why? Everything he's had to deal with, yet he can still step in the box and hit a home run. there's so many different guys out there. I would like to say that, it's Justin Verlander after tomorrow.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you know what? Let's talk about something you brought up a little earlier, and it goes to the Justin Verlander point, and that's the bullpen. It's obvious that in the playoffs, trust is a huge factor. It's even more glaring who AJ trusts, because he went back to Brad Peacock after throwing 50-some pitches on Friday night. He went to a Devinsky because he believes in him. He already said he wasn't going to use Giles. But going forward now tomorrow night, you expect Verlander to go long, but if he doesn't, or if God forbid there's a situation, how do you think he's going to use his pen going forward?
I'm extremely curious about that because I'm not even going to talk about the fact that Justin Verlander's not going to go at least five. He's going to go five,
right.
And he's going to have a death grip on that baseball when AJ, if AJ even gets near him. I love this team. I love what these guys have done. But the first half of the season with this bullpen was lights out. The second half of this bullpen, has been awful. It's been guys sputtering at moments. I think we're seeing the exhaustion. We're seeing the taxing of the arms. And then the confidence wavers when you're not feeling 100%. And these guys are reeling right now. I'm just wondering which one of those guys is going to be able to get it together mentally and make it happen. Debo's stuff looks good enough. I just feel that pitch selection might be and execution might be a little bit of an issue. Giles is going to be rested because he didn't pitch yesterday. But again, the mentality of going out there and pitching is going to be a huge factor. I think if anybody other than a McCullers or a Peacock come out of that bullpen, you're going to be a little sketchy.
So, Blummer, me and my partner argued on Friday about momentum, and he's on the side that momentum can carry you. And it looked at, because coming back from L.A., the Astros had won a big game, and then they come in and win game three based off of that momentum. And I was on the other side. I said, I don't think momentum in baseball means that much, and maybe in other sports. And you played in a series and had some big hits, and it settle it for us. Is momentum a big deal? Is this going to carry over going into L.A. for this team, or is it, if they go out and put up a goose egg in 4 or 5 innings, does it not matter?
Well, game two carried over into game three, I believe, as far as momentum is concerned, because the way they finished that ball game in game two with the offense getting going, it did carry over into game three. But we've also seen in game two and game five that momentum in baseball, we talk about it all the time in the clubhouse, is win each inning, and that's how you create momentum, is winning each inning. And we've seen in game two, game five, where that momentum can shift literally by half inning almost. So you got to ride that out. But I think in the way they won it and the way they've beaten up on the Dodgers bullpen for the second time in this series, momentum is on their side just because they planted that seed of doubt in a guy like Kenley Jansen. I've seen the interviews with Brandon Morrow. He is, he's trying to look for excuses and answers for why he is not being successful. And I think that in part takes a little bit of momentum, but it's not until they step on that field in game six and score first. I expect the Astros to be aggressive early on and get that run on the board. If the Astros come out of game five and go into game six, score first with Justin Verlander on the mound, yes, I believe there is such a thing as momentum.
Give me that scenario you gave me the other day again, and I'll take it right now. You give me 3 runs in Verlander tomorrow night, I don't care about anything else, and I'll take it. But the one thing that I wanted to get your opinion on, too, is a lot of people have been talking to Barry and myself and tweeting us and asking about McCullers' availability in Game 6. Where are you, if we do get late in the game, on using a McCullers in a Game 6 as opposed to saving him should there be a Game 7 for your best arm and the freshest arm ready for you?
If you have a multi-run lead late in the game, 8th, 9th inning, I'm bringing in Lance McCullers.
Wow.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. I don't know, man. That would scare me to death. But, I could see it. I mean, because if you're AJ Hinch, who else can you count on in that bullpen is the thought, right?
Yes. And for me, Lance, in the way he closed out game 7, gives him a little more credibility and confidence coming into that game. And when everybody knows that you have a chance to close out that World Series and do it, you got to go for it.
Talk a little bit about Yuli and what happened and the mindset and that clubhouse and you know, again, being a player, what's going on in that clubhouse and was did it go as you expected and handled the way you thought it should be?
I think you know, Major League Baseball, the Astros, the Dodgers, even Dave Roberts, you know, having some of that Japanese descent, handled it extremely well. I think that they didn't want to make it a bigger issue than it was, but it is going to be a big issue, especially in the climate of society today, that these things are going to be, you know, spoken about. They're going to be dealt with, and he's going to run into a tough problem when he gets into L.A. They are not going to be kind to him. We know that. But at the same time, you know, you just hope internally that things get worked out and there's an understanding that there was a mistake made. And I think Yuli's given himself a lot to this team in the sense that he is a good guy. He made a mistake and that they will be supporting him. But it's going to take a group effort to kind of insulate Yuli Gurriel from what's about to happen to him in L.A. And hopefully, you know, a win will erase a lot of the damage that was created by the actions.
Well, we love you, Blummer. We know you got things to do. We're going to try and get you on the horn again tomorrow, but we do want to give you shouts and props, too, because of the fact that our listeners saw still photos of the ball in L.A. in Game 2 that Puig couldn't catch, and you were right there. And then everybody's like, no, that was just, you know, luck have it. Someone looked like Blummer. And then someone said, no, because look what Blummer just tweeted, and you were given the exact camera angle where you were the fantastic stuff. As always, we love you having you on the air, but we love even more the commentary that you give us all throughout the season. Have a great rest of the series, and hopefully we'll talk to you tomorrow.
I look forward to it, guys. Hopefully we can talk some more, and I appreciate the opportunity coming on with you guys.
Anytime, my friend. Jeff Blum on the HR&P listener line. Always great stuff. We're going to continue with a whole lot more dialogue on the World Series and beyond. Don't go anywhere. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Yuli's a guy that comes to the park and works hard at his craft, and he's been very fortunate to come over from Cuba, and he knows the opportunity that he has here, and the fans love him here, and it would be a distraction, I would say, if he was a guy that was so flamboyant and always making trouble off the field or on the field, and that's not Yuli, so there's under no circumstances that going to be any distraction. I firmly believe that he's going to come out and play like he has.
And the first pitch, a swing and a high fly ball deep left field. It's a tie game.
The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on The Usual Suspects, where we got a whole lot to talk about and a whole lot more thanks to Jeff Blum. Again, thanks, Blummer, for joining us from his appearances. He is the AT&T Sportsnet Astros color commentator on all the broadcasts, does a hell of a job, but he is a fantastic follow on Twitter, too. At Jeff Blum. We've got plenty more to get in on the Yuli stuff where we just played the sound and the home run. We've got plenty more to get in on the series itself, but we really appreciate the fact that Corey hung in there while Blummer was on, so we want to get him in as soon as possible. So, Corey, what's up? You want to talk about the Dynamo tonight, right?
No, yeah, sure, man. Come on now. About Mel Golfer. All right. No, so I know that he touched on this a little bit as far as momentum goes. I know there are a lot of things that go into momentum, but with the Astros able to get into their bullpen or get into the Dodgers bullpen head and be able to do what they've been able to do throughout this series, and with the comebacks and with the drama, and after especially last night, what does it do for their confidence level for the Astros and the confidence level for the Dodgers? Like, what kind of head games do you think are going on right now? I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Corey, and good question. And it's funny because you used a different word. And I think that's where you almost, to me, can separate the two, because you said confidence. And I think momentum is different than confidence to me. And in baseball, I think that it's, you know, again, it's just my opinion, but I don't know that momentum means as much. But confidence means everything. If you think you can get to their bullpen, you're much more confident. You know what I mean? And I think that that for sure carries over. And I know that this team goes into L.A. now thinking, if we're down, we're not out. We're definitely not out of it. But both teams are thinking that. Be honest. I mean, they came back as well, and they kept coming back and scoring on this Astros. Because they look at this Astros bullpen and think the same thing. If we can run Verlander or run up his pitch count, we should be fine. No matter what the lead is or the lead that we have. So I think you're going to see a confident team, even if they get down early in L.A. I don't expect that to happen with Verlander on the mound. Because I hate to admit it, but he wants to close this out.
Oh, no doubt.
And with that kind of win, the last thing Verlander wants to do. Now, if you want to say that's the momentum where it's like, okay, we're all feeling good. I don't want to screw this up. No one else does either. That may be where it comes into play more than anything is how focused, how could he be more focused than he has been? But you may just see the best Verlander we've seen yet.
Today on Dr. Phil, Barry breaks down momentum versus confidence. No, I'm with you. And here's my perfect example of this, okay? Here's where you get there that you can feel momentum shift, but as Blummer said, it can change in an inning just like the other night when you can take all the momentum into a game and then all of a sudden you give up a three spot in the first and, you know, Kershaw's on the hill. You go, boop, boop,
because
boop,
you think
boop,
about right? it. Yeah, they had, I mean, the Dodgers had a ton of momentum coming into this game feeling like, hey, we've tied it up and Kershaw's on the mound and we get to go back to L.A.? Oh, so, yeah, it can flip quickly.
But here's where I tie it in, okay? And in all my years playing, I know this from the fact that when you spend the time with the team that you spend and you see it in guys' eyes, the mental portion of this game is all series leading into it and throughout the first game, you heard the Stros bullpen is nothing and the Dodgers bullpen is almost invincible. And all of a sudden, you've got the confidence and the momentum to say every single time Dave Roberts goes to his pen, I'm feeling really good. I'm going to step into that box, and I'm going to believe. If you're Alex Bregman, if you're some of the guys that have hit Jensen, that's the first thing I said when Kenley Jensen came into the game. And even when Bregman got the bomb, even though they were down 6-1, I thought, oh, God, that's the second time he's touched him up. There's not a time the rest of this series that he's going to feel not the slightest bit intimidated when Jansen's on the mound. Now you got a guy like Morrow, and I don't care if it was third straight day pitching or whatever it is. They're going to, anytime he's back on the bump, not only is he going to have a little bit of a question mark in his head about what he can do, but coming up to the plate, all those guys that got hits off him are going to be like, yep, bring him in and let him get loose and warm real quick because I'm ready for him.
Yeah. I mean, you look at you flip the script and you look at Giles and it's the same thing. And momentum can be bad as well as it can be good, right?
Leading.
Yeah. So I'm with you in that. I think right now it's advantage hitters on both sides. Everyone, I mean, they got to Kershaw. They got to Keuchel. The lineups for both of these teams feel like they're not out of it, and they're never out of it. So what will probably happen? It'll probably be 1-0 tomorrow.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you've got to feel good if you're the Astros, at least.
And to your point, you want even more motivation for Justin Verlander, not that you don't need it, and I completely agree he wants to be the man to close this out. But
I mean,
he
think
also
about that
wants
story.
To be, of the two guys that have been scrutinized more than any other pitchers in the postseason, as both being two of the best pitchers of a generation, Kershaw failed last night.
Yeah.
He wants to be the guy with the same opportunity going, you want to see momentum shift and you want me to see me put it away? Give me the ball and let me get on the mound.
It's other than it happening at home, it's almost the perfect ending to a storybook season.
No doubt.
You wait until 2 seconds left, and we've heard it a million times. You get him. He's here. He hasn't lost. He didn't have a great outing last time. Redemption is here. It's his opportunity. I mean, you couldn't write the script any better other than making it happen at home.
No doubt. No doubt. So it should be fun. Right now, you guys will talk about some fun and games, but I want to talk about some serious business. I want to talk about my good friends at Window World because I know that it's getting cooler outside, but it also has been hot all summer, and you know they're going to have some cold days in the wintertime, and you really are always looking at your energy bills and wondering, how can I reduce that high number of how bad they are when it's really hot in the summer or when it gets chilly in the wintertime? Well, I've got a solution for you that at least you can consider. You don't have to do it, but I'm going to give you the reasons why you should check out the people at Window World. First and foremost, it's the country's number one window company by offering a lifetime warranty, all the products made in the United States of America, and it's a higher quality product at a low price. Starts at just $189 a window, $45 for solar zone low E, which meets Texas energy regulations. But the best part of this whole thing, in which you can actually get an analyzation done and you can check out how you can lower your energy bills, you just call Window World and they do a free written estimate. They come to you. They see what you have. They tell you where they can help, and they walk away. There's no strings attached, no high pressure. If you want them back, you call call them back. They come to you. They do the work, and you see the savings begin. If you don't want them to come back and you're going to take your chances, you just walk away. 713-439-1172 or windowworldhouston.com. 713-439-1172 or windowworldhouston.com. Window World, simply the best for less. Give them a call.
ESPN 97.5.